Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Castle 8 Spare Time Bowling Show, only on 105.7 FM, The Fan. It's a two-hour show, folks. It's not every week going to be 2 hours, but it's 2 hours this week. You know how big of a show this is? That, first of
you
all,
you got to give a Ric Flair woo out there.
Yes, that's Dwight. Phil Brilo's here. Do you know how big of a show it was this week, Phil? Or is?
Yeah.
It's such a big show that Dwight beat you into the parking lot this week.
I know, and he was flying into the lot.
That's insane.
I almost took out Tom Clark.
I swear you were up on two wheels turning the corner.
I pull in right behind Tom Clark, commissioner of the PBA Tour. Again, showing you how big of a show this week, I put a request in for Tom Clark for 10:35, mm-hmm. On the phone, be fine.
Right.
He's like, hey, can I come in? I was like, sure, if you want to come in, whenever you want. I pull in, there's Tom Clark in the parking lot. I was like, all right, come on in, dude. And then Dwight almost took out Tom Clark.
Right. That would have been a tragic end to a great PBA season. It really would have been.
And it would have happened on our show. Let's get to a couple things since we had the commissioner in studio. When he got out of his car, I was like, so do you just walk on air now?
Right.
When you walk into the studio. And he's like, whatever. He's like, I still hear from people on social media that complain. So I've got to know, for me personally, like, what are the complaints that people have about this product right now? Because I've got to know. I'm here for you. What are people complaining about now?
Man, just you name it. You know, I mean, first of all, I couldn't wait to talk about the World Series because it was an awesome week. And, man, I couldn't wait to go bowling. I went bowling with my son yesterday. And, because I was just I'm just pumped up about the game and everything that we've seen. So they really, it doesn't really matter what people say, but you name it. We were on in primetime. You should be on, earlier. It's too late for kids.
Late for kids. It started at 7 o'clock.
I know. I actually was joking around with one of the. I didn't joke around with the person. I just kind of mocked him and actually replied, which I should never do. But I said, well, it was 5 o'clock on the West Coast, so maybe we got the West Coast kids,
Right.
Meanwhile, the NCAA basketball national championship game will be on at 9 o'clock.
Right.
And start about 9:20, in a couple weeks. I mean, every sport is at night.
Every sport is
so,
at night.
I know. The Bucks, they better play all their games in the day.
We have been begging for prime time. We've been begging for weeknight prime time forever on this show.
There are a lot of decisions and a lot of things that happen with every single element of the game, and each one of them you can second guess. You can second guess lane conditions, formats. Sure. You can second guess who does well in tournaments. You can second guess how the trophy is handed to the player, when it is, how long the show is, where you're bowling. The topography. It doesn't matter. Every single thing is debatable, and social media just makes it a lot easier to take the other side sometimes. I mean, but I will say again, there's been more positive than we've ever experienced this year. Most people are really thrilled. And you know what? Social media is great in that way, too, in that it gives people an outlet to say how much they appreciate it and thank you. And I've gotten more of that this year, which, again, is also it's kind of a double-edged sword in a way because, man, we're all the same people, and we've been doing the same stuff for a long time, and getting to this point was actually even harder than what we're doing now. And so it's nice to see people say thank you and appreciate it, but they should know, man, it's been a grind for everybody involved, including the players, all these years.
The fans in Detroit were insane all week. I mean, Portland's got their work cut out for them mm-hmm. coming up in April, May, June.
Yeah,
but they do because you watch the energy that was on those shows.
Dick Allen said
every
that.
Single night, and it was that way. It was a little thin in the morning squads. Obviously, we were doing qualifying and flow bowling, but those evening squads, that one night where Norm and Walter Ray are crossing next to each other, and they just have this whole group of fans, and bowlers are actually turning around laughing, enjoying it, because everybody's cheering on Norm and Walter Ray as this whole group, and they just kind of follow them for a couple of games. It was awesome, and it's good to see that fan energy back where, you know, nobody's got to force it. It was there.
You mentioned Maine. I was just in Maine about 6 or 7 days ago. I went for a promotional event to promote the playoffs that are coming up there, and that was something that the proprietor at the bowling center said to all the people there, was that, hey, I'm watching TV every week, and all the other crowds around the country have taken note of what we did, and they are bringing the noise, and we're going to have to step it up to still be the number one. So, yeah, you hit on it. Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Before we get to the World Series bowling and all this other stuff, you've been around since what year? When did you start?
With the PBA, 2008, so it's more than 10 years now.
The sport is the healthiest since when?
I mean, that's debatable. You know, I think that when the new PBA came in the new ownership in 2000, they really invested a lot into the game themselves. And so for a period of years there, from about 2001 to 2005, I'd say, it was...
stupid money.
It was healthy because of the money. ESPN was a little bit more behind it. So I'd say that era right there was pretty good. You know, from a fan standpoint, I'm not sure. It may be earlier than that, and maybe even early 90s, I think, from a total vibe standpoint. But those early 2000s were strong.
Okay, so then in 2000, and you said 2000 to 2005. So what essentially happened before you took over?
Well, you know, I think that level of investment from the ownership group started to wane. They started looking at the bottom line, right. and looking at the bottom line. The things like the recession didn't help. I mean, 2008 was tough for everybody,
right?
And everything kind of took a dip, and we had to make it work financially, you know, on our own as a PBA, and also I think that our relationship with our media partners was not as exciting as it is now because we have a new, fresh partnership. So that kind of waned. But I would never, rip our relationship with ESPN. That was strong, and ESPN is a great network. It's the number one sports network, and being on that network was strong for bowling all those years. So when you hear people now say, well, with Fox, you know, it's their energy towards the game, Fox's investment in the game, it coming from an outside party, not the ownership of the PBA, it makes a big difference right now. And that's why you see this sort of electricity and rejuvenation right now, because we were able to have a package that was attractive to a partner that would invest in it themselves.
But there's a big difference. I mean, with all due respect to ESPN, they didn't give you the opportunity to do what you just did with the World Series of Bowling and go, you know, 5 straight weeknights. On primetime TV. You never had that opportunity. And part of that is because of their other commitments to other sports that they had to do and that they were locked into financially or whatever else. So I understand why they couldn't let you do that. But I'm telling you right now, man, Rami, who was the host of this show, I told the story on the air about how he's at Kyle Troop on and whatever else. So I had dinner with him last night. He was in town for the Bucks game, and he's going back this morning. And I said, oh man, big 2-hour bowling show tomorrow. And he's like, 2 hours? What happened? And I said, hey, man, I said, they've been on every night this week. He's like, they've never done that before. I said, no. I said, remember World Series of Bowling in Vegas? You just go out there. He's like, yeah. I'm like, well, now the Fox Sports 1. I said, they're going every single night. Now, I got to think, from a rating standpoint, and I don't know what they are, and I'm assuming you probably have a better idea than I do, from a number standpoint, that has to be a hell of a lot better than showing a tape show, which people don't know it's taped unless you're a Facebook junkie or something and want to find out what happened. But most people don't know that one way or the other, but those numbers had to be much better than what you were probably seeing on a weekend in January.
Well,
maybe not.
You know, well, it's ratings are an interesting thing. I mean, they really have so much more to do with the platform, the lead in, I think that there's a difference between ratings and impact.
All right, stop talking for a second. So either he's making it easier for ESPN here when he gives me the news, or the numbers weren't as good as he wanted, so he's setting it up to go that way. Either way, he's going somewhere with this.
No. They were exactly what we wanted and expected, and they were 30% higher. Well, hold on. Hold on. Because there are realities. I just don't like to douse enthusiasm. I mean, They were 30% higher than what FS1 had in any weeknight in March last year.
There you go.
So,
again.
So bowling, you know, bowling performing for FS1 in their investment in the, now FS1's overall ratings are not the same as ESPN.
I don't care.
But if ESPN has a set number that's already watched, when you're watching the NFL countdown show,
right,
on Sunday afternoon, and it has almost 2 million viewers, and
you
the
held
next
a,
show.
And you held a million.
We held pretty well.
Against
and
the
when NFL. And when you have that, you know, the numbers would look, you know, dip higher there than what you would see each time on FS1. Not higher than when we're on Fox. We've been on Fox 3 or 4 times this year, and we'll be again 2 more times. They those numbers are higher than anything we did on ESPN.
But the difference is...
But FS1, it, but the difference is... Every night, energy from the fans, social media, buzz, love. They love it.
Right.
When you're watching the when you're watching a tape show 3-4 weeks after it was done, the hardcore fans have a hard time loving it. Even if the number's higher because of the almost like drive-by viewership.
Sure.
So you have to analyze things in different ways.
Okay, I'll analyze it in my way then.
Okay.
So this is how I analyze it. I analyze it in this way. Number one, it was the best thing I've seen, like across the board, night in, night out, night in. Even when it was a train wreck on different patterns on a certain lane, left lane, whatever it was still entertaining. Mm-hmm. And like you said, and I wasn't there during qualifying and all that other stuff, but just watching on TV, crowd seemed to be pretty into it. So that was good. But to me, the difference is you're 30% higher than any other show or whatever else at FS1. All I care about, I don't really care about ESPN at this point. They're done. All I care about is making sure this relationship stays good and continues to grow going into next season. Because in my brain, I'm thinking, look, if we exceed expectations, that should make things a lot easier and better to go out there and sell this damn thing, get more sponsorship money, increase player pool money. So for me, I'm just worried about making sure they're good with what you all are doing.
We proved this week that we can do that.
Yes.
You know, we can go live every night, and it can, and the numbers went up every day.
Yep.
And so I remember when we signed the deal with Fox in Los Angeles at their office, one of the top executives said to me, you know, we've got a week in March where our primetime schedule could use a lift. And it's after their coverage of the conference basketball tournaments. Like,
right,
they cover the Big East. Marquette, you know, when Rob Stone was at Madison Square Garden the day before he came to Detroit to cover the World Series of Bowling. And that week, they said, was open. And we talked about it. And I said, well, I've always pitched to ESPN the opportunity to go live with the entire World Series of Bowling. They could never make it happen. This is what we can do. They said it. They snapped their fingers and said, we're in. So then to actually pull it off and have everybody be excited about it, got a great note from Fox, the top-level executive at Fox this week after Belmo won the world championship, saying, what incredible drama, with exclamation points.
Oh, never got that from,
I never did get that from John Skipper at ESPN.
No.
I'll tell you right now. And we provided plenty of drama for ESPN. Mm-hmm. But it's really exciting to show them what we can do. And we're doing similar stunts with the PBA League coming up. Past years, we had to tape all that, and that's got an electric atmosphere. This year, it's all live, consecutive nights, prime time on FS1. And so we'll keep doing things like this, and more people will become accustomed to it. When you do anything for the first time, you know, you got to build. You have to.
Sure.
So,
what about from a production standpoint, as far as – because you're working with all new production people for the most part, right?
No.
When you're out there with Fox
else? That's another thing that a lot of people think. And I hear that a lot, and I kind of laugh about it with our crew, because it's the same producer, the same director, the same top cameraman.
But, oh, really? So you even brought the cameraman. The other stuff I knew were the
it's
majority
our same
of your
truck.
Guys.
It's
really?
It's all the same people. What Fox has done with their support is their top producers have not only provided notes off of every show and past shows to help us improve, but and not notes to say, don't advertise this way, don't show this ad.
Right.
That's all we got really from ESPN at the end of the rope there. But from Fox, it's how to make it more compelling. Now, Rob Stone is an undeniably, you know, one of the best broadcasters in sports today.
Agreed.
Having him on the shows is a big improvement. They've invested in slow motion cameras that you see. Mm. Yep. That just those little touches make it feel so much bigger. They invested in coming out to one of our first events and filming hero shots with our best players in front of Fox signs.
Right.
And when they use that stuff, it lifts the show. They invested in something we always wanted to do with Specto and Kegel to have that strike track.
Which is awesome.
We've wanted to do that for 10 years, and we just couldn't afford it. Fox said, how much? Well, let's work together. Let's build it. We built it together. It took a long time, but we made it. And you see, and it just adds to the show. So they have supported us, the same crew. I mean, the same people, all the same guys. I love those guys. I mean, they deserved a shot to have that kind of support and be out there for this first year on Fox, and they've all done a tremendous job.
Yeah, it is unbelievable. It's good stuff. I want to come back, and I want to talk about how the players are reacting to all of this, because from a schedule-wise, it's changed a little bit for the players as well. And this last week, we said last Sunday on the Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show that whoever is on TV after all the bowling they did the previous week and then all the bowling that day and then having a bowl at night for that, just to be there, it was a big accomplishment as far as we're concerned. And I'll let Phil and Dwight maybe talk in the next segment to say, too.
Sorry.
That's the Late Spare Time Bowling Show, only on 105.7 FM. The Fan, Jeff Riegels of 11frame.com, has a piece up explaining to all of you that want to argue about who the greatest bowler of all time is, why it truly is Jason Belmonte. And there's a reference to a bowler from Milwaukee in the piece. Go check that out from Jeff Riegels at 11frame.com. Tom Clark, commissioner of the PBA, in studio. We were talking about in the break, and we didn't bring up before the break, and I had brought up to him. He's like, yeah, we should probably bring that up. Is those replays on Fox Sports 1 is really getting a lot of people to watch that may not have seen it on the weekend or may not have seen it the previous night during the week.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing that up, because that is another piece of the overall puzzle that is an incredible improvement in being with Fox. And so the way that they actually do the ratings is cumulative for every show. We were talking previously about original airing, live airing numbers. But when you add up the numbers for all of the re-airs, which is at least 10 per show, and then you know, hundreds more on regional sports networks that Fox has, the numbers have already tripled the total audience last year. So you have more and more people seeing us, even if it isn't at that original airtime every time. It's really, and like you said, it serves as a promotion continuously. You become more familiar with the star players, so that when they show back up on programs, you feel more connected to them and have a rooting interest. So, yeah, those replays are another one of the big pluses.
What about the players now? How did they adjust to this new World Series of Bowling schedule and how it all played out?
Well, the World Series was actually a very similar schedule to what we've had in the past, other than stretching out each day in the second week to culminate with a live show. One big difference was the live coverage on Flow Bowling, which Phil covered,
right,
of the match play on the same day as the show. So you could watch on our digital partner, Flow Bowling, the match play elimination rounds and find out during the day who was going to be on that evening's telecast. And I think everybody really enjoyed that. I think people, including the players, a little bit more of a grind, but there wasn't that one day or 3 or 4 days off before a show. It was an immediate and still in that competition mode and moving into the show. But the players, they've had more travel to do, more consistent travel to do this year. There's probably more intensity on the lanes. There's more pressure because of our playoff points list to be in the top 24, because our biggest prize of the year, $100,000 first place prize, is at the PBA playoffs, and you've got to be in it to win it, you know. So they're battling all year for those points. I think that because of all the things we've already talked about, the increased attention on the PBA and the shows being more electric, you have more people wanting to be a part of it, and so they're fighting as much and prepared even more for the season than they had in the past. So it's tougher. You know, I think the lane conditions have really varied week to week, and they've been tricky. And there's been no like easy passes really for anyone. They've all had to overcome and bowl in so many different ways, including dual pattern events and multi-pattern events like the World Series. And the game constantly evolves. So it is a mental and physical grind this year that they really have never had in the last 10 years. And so it's been interesting to see who has gone to the top. It's pretty predictable when you look at the list. I mean, the greats figure out a way.
Yeah. It is at a whole different level. And live events-wise, you guys have way more live events than you've had in the past, obviously, just based on this week alone.
Oh, yeah, it's not even close. Yeah, it's by almost four or five times recent years, the live events. And undeniably, for our core audience and for the players and for the people who love bowling, that improves the product, and it improves the intensity and excitement of an event. I mean, when you're talking about wider audiences, I mean, once again, those replays are getting great ratings and they aren't live.
Right.
You know? And we've gotten great ratings on tape shows in the past. And so there's a wide audience of people who just enjoy watching bowling when they're passing through flipping channels, and they don't really care if it's live or taped. And that makes our programming valuable to our partners because it's kind of like evergreen programming. It's not like some other events that might have more widespread media coverage where you're not going to watch that Marquette game again where they lost in the NCAA tournament.
Nope.
They're not going to air it 10 more times.
Nope.
But with bowling, you're going to watch people will catch it on different times and will watch that show. So we kind of fit both a live sport and as an evergreen.
From a live event perspective, I'm assuming, that means I'll be right. Assuming sponsorship money will be up next year and you'll have more money in the coffers based on all the numbers you're going to have from this year. And they're also in bed helping to sell this, which is the best part of the whole deal, I think.
Yep.
So I love that. But are you kind of capped as far as what you think, how many live shows you can have in a year right now? Or do you think that can expand even further depending on the money that you have?
Oh, he can go further. We're incredibly flexible. We're able to schedule events, anytime. Our players, from a physical standpoint, are able to withstand a full year of bowling every week. You know, I mean, of course, people want to take weeks off, but we can do more events, and we can fill any desire of any kind of media partner to have programming. That's another thing that makes bowling really, really attractive.
Now, along those lines, we've had a couple of tournaments this year, Jonesboro and Lubbock, that made their way up to a full Fox FS1 telecast. Are there other proprietors out there that are looking to jump on board with hosting PBA Tour events? Is that part of this whole snowball of everything coming along?
Yes. We've gotten more notes this year than in previous years, people wanting to host and people really jazzed about the PBA. And we have figured out ways to fit into any size bowling center to bring events there. So, where there's a will, there's a way with any host. And that's the other thing about Fox that you mentioned, Sparky, about the fact that their sales team is selling into our shows, unlike the relationship previously where it was on us to sell
everything,
all sponsorship and advertising. And that's completely different now. I still stay in touch with Fox sales almost every day and, kind of pushing them almost like a jockey, and I always ask, okay, what can we do? And the consistent answer is, do great shows, get great buzz, we'll sell it. And I think that you're seeing that, yes, of course, it's going to take a year for them to get it all under their belt and say, look, here's what you're going to get when you sponsor the PBA, and here's the buzz it creates, and here are the numbers and the number of, and the eyeballs and the types of people watching. They'll have that entire day, all that data available after this season, and we're really counting on next year being big from a sponsorship standpoint.
From a proprietor standpoint that Phil just brought up, that wants to get the PBA Tour in or whatever else, is it a stupid number that they have to come up with in order to get you in their house to do it, or how does that all work?
No, it's not a stupid number.
I'm just asking. I don't know. Because there might be proprietors listening right now being like, yeah, hell yeah, that'd be cool to have a PBA event in Milwaukee.
Yeah,
and
no,
then,
it's a number that we feel like is an exact win-win for everybody, where we feel like, yes, there's an investment they have to make. They have to give up their center. you know, when we're in Thunderbowl and Phil brought up the huge crowds during qualifying on a Tuesday night, well, normally they have a huge league on Tuesday night. So that league has to be told, you're off that week. That revenue for that week is gone from the bowling center. So they have to give up some revenue that they normally would have. They have to pay. So there's an investment on their behalf. But they also
do they have to find sponsorships as well?
They can. Well, it's up to them.
In order to fund the money that they have to pay, you're saying.
And also they make money back on pro-ams. So any pro-am money goes back to the host.
Okay.
They make that all back. They make all the money back on gate in almost every one of our relationships. So when they charge people to come every night, like to the...
Do they set the ticket price or do you?
They set the ticket price.
So each proprietor can set whatever ticket price they want.
Right.
See, I'm learning stuff here.
So you can make your money back by tickets, by pro-ams, by local advertising on the lanes.
Food and drink.
Food and beverage. And also the number one benefit of hosting the PBA is now Thunderbowl. How could you, if you were in Detroit and you're a bowler, how would you not want to bowl at Thunderbowl?
Right. You know? Oh, you're right about that.
Or you're into Detroit to go see it.
Yeah, and it's pretty interesting as well because Lubbock moved their stop up from what used to be an extra frame stop to a full Fox Sports 1 tour stop. They are so invested in it that they're kicking off the USBC Cup part of the PBA Tour in June with another national tour stop. They're so invested in Lubbock that they're having two stops a year.
Usually the proprietors I consider the best, the ones who really respect the sport of the game, the sport, and the people that respect the history. I mean, we've had great relationships with great places. Like even just this year, Indianapolis Woodland Bowl. I mean, you know, the general manager there just went in the PBA Hall of Fame this year. The you know, we went back to Riviera Lanes in Akron, Ohio. The classic home of the Tournament of Champions, and those types of venues actually make every event even better. And then you have someone like Jonesboro and someone like Lubbock who say, we want to be in that conversation as one of the best bowling centers.
For people that go to a bowling event that have never been to a bowling event before, whether they travel down to Illinois for a bowling event or Indianapolis or whatever, what is the situation like for kids that want to get autographs or whatever the case may be? Are there autograph signings? Is it catch them in between walking between lanes? How does that work?
It's both. I mean, the pro-am's the best place to get them and bowl with the pros, get their autographs. That's where I got Earl Anthony's autograph when I was a kid.
Nice.
You know, it was when I was 12 or 13 bowling in a pro-am. It's incredible the amount of time that our players will spend with the fans, taking pictures. You know, I always talk about people like Norm Duke. When you think of Norm Duke, and he's been a PBA bowler since he was 18 years old. In 1983, he won his first title. And he's been out there for, what's it, from 83 to till now, what's that, 40 years?
Long time.
Whatever it is. And week to week to week, and signing every single autograph every day. How many athletes have a career that goes from the age 18 to 55?
Nope.
And are signing. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Norm Duke has signed more autographs than any athlete in the history of sports. And you could say the same about a Pete Weber or something. It's really incredible.
I was in a restaurant in Detroit watching one of the shows. Norm comes in, sits down at another table, and three or four people came up to ask him for autographs after he, you know, before his meal got there. Norm took the time, signed for everybody, talked to him a little bit. It was great. Here he is in the middle, you know, middle of Allen Park, Michigan, a restaurant.
Of course, the new thing today is not autographs; it's selfies. You'd rather have a selfie. And I remember when Norm won this year, just on a whim, on my Facebook page, I said, "Well, it feels like Norm Duke Day when you look at all the people who are posting photos of themselves with Norm Duke that they've taken through the years." And it's amazing. There were just thousands of people that had a picture. Here's me with Norm Duke. And so our players are really accessible. When you come watch an event, you're so close to the action. And you can feel it and you can hear it, the power that these players have. It's different. When we go into a new place, that's the first thing I say to the bowling center is, you're going to hear a sound in here that you've never heard before. You know, the sound of these pins being hit by balls coming in at incredible angles and speed that you've never seen before. And it's just a lot of fun to be there.
This week affected me so much, Tom, that on Thursday night, as honest to God's true, Sparky, I had a dream from watching the shows all week that I bowled Norm Duke in my dream. So I woke up Friday morning with that memory of bowling Norm Duke.
Amazing.
Just from watching all the shows all week.
Did you lose again?
I didn't get to that point. Probably.
Phil Brilo over there. Dwight Albert over here from the Spare Time Pro Shop in New Berlin. The commissioner of the PBA Tour, Tom Clark, in studio. We'll talk about the World Series of Bowling coming up next. Gasoline, Spare Time Bowling Show, only on 105.7 FM, The Fan. You haven't signed up for your Spring and Summer's League yet. Summer League at Castle Lanes and Racine. Make sure to do so. Doubles League, 1 hour is all it requires of you. You get to pick your night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. The winner gets a couple $100 cash, plus any choice of a current Storm bowling ball. And for being in the league, you get a three-ball Storm bowling bag or a High Five bowling jersey, your choice. And again, it's a one-hour time commitment, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday night. Phil Anko just doing it right down at Castle Lanes. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the World Series of Bowling. First things first, let's talk about the format that y'all had to do. So talk about how the format came together, because Phil had me all excited last week to start, and then he just crushed me after the start. I was like, oh, finally we're going back to what I want.
You got a little bit of it.
It was a combo of what it was. So go ahead, Tom, explain.
Yeah, it's actually interesting. And this one is, you know, occasionally I'll make an error, believe it or not. Right. I'll make a lot of them. So when I kind of came up with that format that you love, Sparky, and used it back in 2011, where it was all four of the finalists bowling at once with the low score being eliminated, get it to three, then the low score, then get it to the final two, so you could kind of watch the champion throughout the show.
And Storm dominated that World Series. They just dominated.
And they did it pretty good again.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And I liked that format. I wanted to bring it back, and it was all scheduled that way. And then,
oh man,
it was all scheduled that way. And then, I looked at the thing and I said, I can't believe this, but back then they were 90-minute shows, and for some reason I remembered them as 2-hour shows.
Right.
So we had 30 minutes to fill, so I needed another game. So I sat there and was racking my brain a few days before the shows to come up with. And I have to tell you, I think this one way that we used is better. I mean, and it was awesome because you had all four and you kind of had an opportunity to introduce each player in that first game. It was fast paced. You kind of got to pick your favorite as they bowled that first game. That it was incredibly important. It wasn't just a survival game. It was, I want to be the top seed
and rest.
So I can rest, wait for the championship match. It meant a lot of money to that match, meant a lot of guaranteed money for each player because it created their seeding. And then you got to watch the traditional stepladder all in one show. So because of my goof, we actually ended up with, I think, something that we could probably revisit because it's pretty cool.
I thought it was brilliant. And I thought of Sparky right away. But how did the pros like it? Did they give you any feedback?
Well, at first I heard a couple of people who I think were a little bit misguided. You know, they were saying, well, what about the seedings in the qualifying rounds? So why do we have to reseed? Well, the seedings in the qualifying rounds were meant to decide the bracket. So if you're the number one seed in the qualifying round, you bowled number 16 in the first round. That was your advantage for being the number one seed.
Correct.
After that, it's all even when you get to that final four. So I think that was a misguided criticism. Other than that, I think they all loved it because it gave them an opportunity to test bowling balls. It gave them an opportunity to get used to the lights. I mean, for a lot of players, being on TV is not a normal occurrence. So being on there and then a little warm up and not a loss. You weren't going to be eliminated. Whereas if it's a one game and you bowl bad and you're gone, there's more finality. So I think that ultimately the players actually liked it. I was a little concerned about maybe having four at once would create so much traffic on the lanes that the pattern would get wrecked by the end of the show, and that really didn't happen.
Yeah, I was thinking when I first saw them, I'm thinking, okay, some guy's getting a second chance to win here compared to the old format. It's like you try it. I mean, Chris Prather tested what, 6 bowling balls during that one game?
That one game.
It was insane. Yep. But that part led to him getting through that whole entire show.
Right.
So it's neat once you see it in action. I was a doubter at first. I'm like, oh, I wanted to see the same thing Sparky did. Once you see it in action, you realize what these guys are doing and how quickly they adapted to the strategy of that match. That's what really made it interesting for me. That's what I really enjoyed.
For a viewer, you actually picked it up pretty quick. I picked it up pretty quick. I'm like, okay, I like this. This is good. You know,
even Stone and Peterson realized as quickly as it was going, they weren't probably going to be able to do it the traditional way, that they were just going to have to kind of go with it a little bit differently as far as how they were going to call it, because it was going so quick, like you said. I thought it was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I really did. I was heartbroken at first last week.
But you bought into it real quick.
Yeah, but now he tells me I was going to have my own way, and he got the time wrong. Still am a little heartbroken, but I don't know, man. I thought it was awesome. And again, you know, the one thing that we've talked about on this show, and I'm sure you would agree with, the way these TV shows have played out for the most part, have been unbelievable for you guys. I mean, the drama that goes along with these TV shows and what you've gotten out of. See, I mean, literally, I mean, I don't know, on the edge of your seat. I don't know how many shows that you would say, well, that really wasn't all that entertaining. It was a bunch of blowouts. That really hadn't happened. I mean, even the Belmo match on Thursday, Buttriff just runs out the last six to make it interesting for Belmonte. And then Belmonte's got the drama there in the 10th. You couldn't have scripted it any better.
Yes.
And that arena is really an unusual place to play, but it adds a lot of drama because you never really feel safe. You feel like there's a chance to be snake bitten at any point. You can throw a pretty good shot and leave a 7-10. You know, you can throw like Chris Prather, he threw a pretty good shot and left a 4-10.
Right.
You know, and you see kind of really interesting things happen in that arena, which kept you on the edge of your seat. But you know what? Pro bowling has always done that. And one game matches featuring the best players fighting on the types of conditions we put out, we've always had great shows, great matches, great drama. But when you pile it on night after night after night with different looks and different players, it becomes even greater.
We were at Texas Roadhouse Wednesday night with Chris Prather match. We asked them to put it on there. They did, which I thought was pretty cool.
All right.
Okay. So, of course, I'm watching it glued to the set. And Chris Prather leaves that pocket 4-10. And I scream out, what?
God.
And so I got yelled at by my wife.
You should have.
We're in a restaurant.
Shut up. Oh, my God.
And, of course, they didn't have the audio. And I watched it back later. And he says, what was that? Yeah. What was that? You know?
Right.
He said, what is that?
What is that?
Five times.
What is that?
Right.
It's a 4-10.
Well, you had that, and then you had Buttriff on the other show leaving a 5-6.
Yeah. Oof.
Where the pins moved?
That was almost a controversy, yeah.
Yeah, during the World Championship match play, EJ Tackett left a pocket 9-10.
Right?
Yeah. EJ, I have seen EJ Tackett this year. I actually went up to him and talked to him for a while at the end of the week, because not just at the World Series, but at the TOC as well and a few other tournaments, I've seen him leave things that were just incredible. His ball must be entering it in directions that the pins have never seen before, because he seems to leave things in at times that I can't understand how a pin could stand, and yet they stand up, and it's happening to him a lot this year. It could just be bad luck, but he's bold. He's had a great year. Clearly, he's in the top 5 in points, or number 2 in points, but he could be higher.
You know, I can't think of the player, and I'm sure you'll be able to tell me, or Phil and Dwight can. But I remember talking about it on this show earlier this year, and there was a TV show, and the bowler had relayed that a conversation with you kind of got this bowler kind of back on track, and he had a really good week, and that mentally you kind of got him fixed mentally a little bit. Do you know who I'm talking
about? Dick Allen.
Yeah,
it was Dick Allen.
He's won 2 tournaments this year.
Now, hold on.
So what was that conversation?
Right. So wait. Because again, from a guy that does sports talk radio, I mean, we talk about all the commissioners of different sports. You don't hear about Roger Goodell fixed this dude. Now he won MVP. I mean, it just doesn't happen. It does not happen in other sports, right? And here he is, the commissioner of the tour. And the reason it triggered my memory was you talking about walking up and talking to EJ Tackett. Yep. So you have a lot of conversations with these guys throughout the week then. And obviously, in Dick Allen's case, it really changed him.
Well, I didn't know it would change him that he would put that much weight on it, you know. With Dick, I've always been really kind of fond of him. He's a really interesting character, and he really tries. He's really somebody I like to watch bowl as well. But But really with him, I just have always had a conversation with him about the fact that anything is possible. You know, don't ever think that something's impossible in anything, and including sports especially. And I don't know if before the year he thought it would be possible for him to win two titles this year. I mean, what he said when he won, I think what he said was, I didn't think I'd win two. I never thought I'd win one in the first place.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you just have to have an open mind to be great at this game. And it's a mental – it's the number one thing I've learned through all these years of watching the best players perform is that the most important thing is focus. And if you're able to maintain a focus with all the noise going on around you, it is it's a talent that is way underrated. So
he considers himself the typical house bowler, and they said that several times on the show. So I got a new nickname for him after watching him at the World Series of Bowling. He's Bowling's assassin is my nickname for him. When he wins...
Well, when he gets I think he's 7-1 in championship matches. Yeah. You know, when he gets there, and he's when he's in a PBA league team, the team pretty much wins.
Yes.
He comes through in really clutch moments because he has focus. His match, I'll relay this from the World Series this week in that event, that first event. We had the crowd going crazy between the breaks. Hometown man Mike Jay was there getting the crowd going. And I think we were singing Sweet Caroline. The whole place was just singing along, and it was loud. And I was watching Dick Allen. He was sitting in his chair with his face completely stone-faced, staring at the pins, waiting for 5 minutes straight for that match to start. And he didn't even have he didn't move. He didn't have a reaction. Yeah. And I mentioned that to him after when I was handing him the trophy. And he said, you know what, you got to have it. You got to have it to be out here.
It is just crazy. It's good stuff. All right, maybe we'll actually get into some bowling talk of actually what happened on TV, maybe.
Remember, we have 2 hours.
We do have 2 hours, thank God, because we wouldn't have talked about any of the TV show. Coming up next, we'll talk more about what it all looked like on TV this week at the World Series of Bowling in Detroit. Castle Lane Spare Time Bowling Show, only on 105.7 FM. The Fans, Brewers news here. Brewers set to acquire shortstop CJ Hinojosa.
I think that's how you say it.
From the Giants, Robert Murray and Andrew Baggerly of The Athletic reporting. Milwaukee may send Eric Kratz back to San Francisco in that deal. And I would assume Hinojosa will be in the minors because he was just drafted in 2015. 24 years old, had a late Achilles tear in 2017, and then missed 50 games after testing positive for drug of abuse for the second time. Oh, wonderful. So we'll see if he ever makes it up to the big leagues. Obviously, they weren't going to keep Kratz, so they just wanted something for him, and this is what they ended up with. Okay, so opening day, by the way, is Thursday. Can you believe opening day is in March?
Whoa, wow. Yeah, that crept up on us. Wow.
Thursday. It's insane. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the World Series of bowling here. And we'll start off with the Cheetah Championship. So let me tell you, I did not have a good week with my television set and my DVR. So I'll just, as we go through tournaments, I'll tell you what has occurred.
Mm-hmm. You said you're weak.
Yep. So Monday night, the Cheetah Tournament was on. DVR's recording, right? We're all set. Everything's good. Well, Monday night in our house is like all the shows that we watch, and they tend to be on all at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. So I was like, well, I'm sure this is going to replay. So I go on and I look. I'm like, oh, it's replaying at 10 o'clock. I'm like, perfect. I'll set the DVR at 10 o'clock. I'll stop this one so I don't lose the show, and then I'll just watch the replay. Okay, fine, no big deal. So I stop it. It records the Cheetah Championship at 10 o'clock. It's all good. So now a couple days later, I'm looking. Now, mind you, we get like 1,000 hours of recording space on this DVR for DirecTV, right? So there is a ton of stuff to record. Mm-hmm. So I see multiple Cheetah Championships. I'm like, oh, I don't need both of these. So I record, I delete one.
Oops.
I deleted the full one and not the 41-minute partial. Right. So as you can see on my notes, I got through match one for seeding, and that's pretty much where it starts. It stops. But let's talk about match one quickly here. So in match one, the first thing that I had down was after we get through Rhino 7-10 split in the first frame, Sherman McNeil both using urethane at that spot. 2-8-10 split in the fourth for Sherman. I wrote down, do you like the pace of play? And we talked about that already. We all like the pace of play, yeah, right? For the most part, No issues? Okay. Nope. So Rhino Page makes a ball change there in the fifth, gets a strike. Sherman misses a 10-pin in the fifth. Dick Allen leaves a 210 split. Doesn't get either of them there in the fifth. 11-pin lead over McNeil after five. Page then leaves a split in the sixth. I then write, what a mess to watch.
Yep.
Because it was a messy deal. I mean, really, there wasn't anybody really doing much of anything there. Dick Allen was the only one. And he ends up with 230, had a handbone there in the ninth. That was the one guy that really stood out through that seating pattern.
Yep. My question for Phil and Tom, obviously they're there seeing it. Why is that arena bay so darn tough? Even Belmo said during the week, boy, this place is tough, quote unquote.
It's 30-year-old Brunswick Anvilane.
But it's also friction. The pin carry, too.
Well, and it's a unique setting because when they originally built that arena, there were only four lanes in it for the back in the days of the National Bowling League in the 1960s. Once that ended, then they expanded it into the 20-lane arena bay, and it's kind of built up from the original base there. You can actually walk underneath those lanes.
Yes.
You can take in, and so it's just over time, it's just beaten up.
Wait,
it's
what did you just say? You just
it's almost like
you
they built
walk under the lanes.
It's like they built if it was the Roman Colosseum, it'd be like they left the Colosseum there, but they built a new stadium on top of it on stilts.
Oh my goodness!
And so it gives an there's an interesting base to the new platform in that arena. That certainly causes, it really depends what part of the lane you play on different lanes in that bay. And, of course, we were on 11 and 12 for all the TV shows, so you get to know those two lanes. And it's kind of like on 11 when you have to play in, there's a really dramatic impact on the ball's ability to finish, so you have to figure that out. But on the Cheetah, you really didn't see a lot of that because everybody has to play out on Cheetah. So there wasn't a lot of that. When we were in the building for the PBA Tour Finals earlier in 2018 in the summer, the scores were huge every game because our patterns were a little softer. They were a little bit more playable and didn't demand as much precision and as much versatility as these patterns at the World Series did. So the scores were like all through the roof. But so you can score in there. It's not like you can't. And the pins will go down, in different ways.
Right.
But depending on your angles, you definitely do see a lot of really interesting things happen with that pin deck and the different panels and for all the reasons that Phil gave.
So is there like a trap door you can get to actually walk below the lanes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's a door in the back that you go down.
We've all been down there. And it feels like you're at the Roman Coliseum.
Anybody take pictures and post these on social media?
Big basement?
The first year, and there's old bowling. There's like an old LT48 in the corner that's seen it all.
Dwight's getting his car.
I have to go there. Yes. I'm driving to Detroit now.
What made this World Series special is it was the 10th one, and the first one was also at Thunderbolt. Mm-hmm. So that's where the event was born. And when we were there 10 years ago for the first World Series of bowling, I remember taking everybody down there. We even did a feature on that year. We did a feature story during a show about the history
that's
down there.
Awesome.
Brought Rob Stone down there, and he moved things around. It was kind of like Geraldo checking Al Capone's vault. What are we going to find down here? Really cool. So the place really is steeped in
history.
Yeah,
that's good stuff. All right, so seating was said. It's Allen, Page, Sherman, and then McNeil. And then match one really wasn't much of a match. Sherman just unbelievable there with a 290 game. McNeil with 152.
Well, obviously, when you have tougher pin carry, you have to have speed and rev rate, and Matt McNeil is a shot maker. Dick Allen considers himself the typical house bowler, but I see it more in Matt McNeil than Dick Allen, but obviously Sherman had a good look that game and obviously got, with speed and rubber, he got the ball to carry.
Now, once again, when you saw McNeil on TV on that arena side, his role is so early and strong.
Yes.
With the way he releases the ball, that it kind of gets him in trouble on that arena side, where a lot of times over on the main bay where they did all the qualifying and match play, his ball would push a little bit longer and have a little different reaction. Mm-hmm. But every single bowler had to fight that. They all knew what it was going in.
But Matt made the final of the world championship, made the top five, and all of the match play, 16 games, was in the arena, and Matt bowled 300 in the arena. So, it also depends
on... He did
have
some success.
He had success in that build, in that side of the building, no doubt about it.
Just
that was
a
different pattern. It was a different pattern.
Right.
And also, it was on TV. I mean, Matt McNeil is one of the great historians of the PBA. He remembers every match ever bowled on TV, what ball was used. I mean, he's like he's almost like a
savant.
We
need to get him on the show, though.
Oh, he could go on and on and on. And he's one of these kids, like a lot of us, who bowled on his plastic pins while he watched the PBA after his youth. And so being on, that was his first time ever on live, TV as an individual for a PBA title. And he had been on a double show before, but not exactly the same thing.
Sparky said a couple of weeks ago when I asked him what he would do differently to improve the PBA, he talked about the real-life stories of them. Well, you couldn't have a better real-life story of Matt McNeil. They showed him as a police officer, and it was a pretty long bit that you did on him. And obviously, he even got a chance to watch it. While you guys are playing
it, thrown him off a little
bit. Spiky hair, right? And then the next shot, I'm thinking, oh God, he's just
please strike.
Not going to strike.
All I
said
was please strike.
Right, but exactly.
When you bring that up, the best backstory that really hardcore fans had before this match, the Cheetah, is Kyle Sherman because of the Brad and Kyle show on YouTube.
Yeah, the YouTube.
These kids, Brad Miller and Kyle Sherman, have their own YouTube channel, and they have a lot of fans that watch everything they do. They video everything, and they work really hard about it. So you get to know these guys. Yeah. A guy on my team in my league is a fan of those two only because of that YouTube channel they have. So he was texting me during the show, saying, do you think Kyle can do it? He feels like he knows Kyle.
That's awesome.
And most people don't know who Kyle Sherman is. Now we all do, and he... Man, Dick Allen won that show, but Kyle Sherman kind of won that show because everybody's a fan of Kyle Sherman now. Yep. Shot 290 on TV, and he and he's really a good kid,
poised
kid. Yep. Yeah, he's somebody to root for and look going
Duke
forward.
Duke really had a great pick with him and called him the Sherman Tank. On the PBA league.
I wonder why Norm's got such a good eye. That's somebody who knows bowling.
He sees talent.
Yeah.
He did that with Norm did that in the league with BJ Moore a couple of years ago as well, where everybody's going, who's BJ Moore? Now everybody knows who BJ Moore is, especially after this.
I've never blown off anything Norm Duke's ever told me. Let's put it that way.
Before we get to the actual, the games and everything, there were two things that stood out to me watching all four nights. Number one, background music. I heard background music through the TV. So we talked weeks about distinctive sounds and noises and distractions, and I picked up that background music. Number two, I loved every night that you guys brought a pro into the booth and called a game with Randy and Rob. I liked that, and they had three different pros, three different nights.
Troop, Duke, then, Duke and
Chris,
Barnes.
Chris Barnes, right.
And Bernie. Belmo was on the Cheetah.
Belmo, too.
He was on the Cheetah show.
Yeah, Belmo was in there as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Sherman defeats McNeil, like I said, 290 to 152. Semifinal match, Phil. Sherman over Page, 229 to 204.
Once again, I think Page just kind of struggled a little bit. He had to deal with McNeil's leftovers from the urethane. And I think to just kind of didn't help Page with his carry.
For those people that don't understand this, and I'm going to go back to Dwight here, or Tom, whoever wants to answer it. But when you got two guys using reactive resins and two guys using urethanes, like you did pretty much on this show, how difficult is that for one or the other? Is it more difficult for the urethane bowler, or is it more difficult for the reactive resin bowler having to adjust the urethane?
Well, Peterson did a great job talking about that, what urethane does, and obviously that's Randy's job, and he did it brilliantly. But I think it's harder with reactive because reactive will magnify everything that's out there. So if it's changing the lane conditions, it's going to
magnify it, right?
Well, it's going to dry up the heads and push the oil down, and the resin ball will read it more and confuse the bowler.
I think it
you agree.
Putting that puzzle together of what exact ball and drilling to use at the exact moment, based on almost a predictive instinct that the shot's going to change because of what's happening around you is, I mean, the difficulty level on that is really high. And there's a lot of luck involved even, but one thing we could do better on the show, I still feel like with the blue oil is show the carry down because I took some pictures this week that I'll put out on social media at some point when I get a time that show the carry down of blue coming off the urethane shots. That's more where it impacts the dry part of the lane on the back end of the lane more than a reactive resin ball that doesn't really
That'd
carry down. Yeah. And when you see that and you go, oh, well, that's why the pattern becomes longer
yep.
due to the fact that someone's using urethane. But you can't really adjust off of the blue oil. You can't adjust off the tracks. You can only everybody knows where people are playing when you're at that level. You still have to trust your ball, but it's mostly predicting the next move that the best players do.
Yes. The adjustments that they have to make. I became a silver certified coach in 1997. Palmer was my master instructor, Palmer Fahlgren, and we were in Madison for one of the college finals. And Palmer was actually calling the action that show. Before the show started, I was one of the dignitaries on the side. And Palmer was obviously in my class for both of those. He sees me in the crowd, and he says, come with me. So we go down right before the pins, and he goes, look at the lane. And I'm looking at him. I'm not getting any idea what he's trying to pick out. He goes, look at what these resin bowling balls are doing to the lane. You could see a strip of oil and then nothing and a strip of oil and then nothing before it hit the pins. He goes, well, you know what that is, Dwight, don't you? I'm like, no, you know, I'm not an expert here. He goes, well, that's your track flare. So the flare of the bowling ball was leaving strips of oil, carry down oil differently on different parts of the back end of the lane. Mm-hmm. That's one of those eye-opening things for me.
And that's probably with half the volume of oil then that they have now on the PBA Tour to fight all these different bowling balls and everything.
Going back 20 years.
Yeah,
that's just crazy. All right, so then Dick Allen comes up in the championship match and disposes of Kyle Sherman to the score of 234 to 195. And the Dick Allen quotes after this on the PBA website. I just focused on keeping it together, not falling apart. When you have a good lead, you don't want to let the bad thoughts creep in or the good thoughts either. Just focus on making the best shot possible every frame. And fortunately, I was able to do that. When I get to TV, I'm hard to beat, Allen said. It's a matter of getting here. I wish I could be as effective in the qualifying and match play rounds of tournaments, and then I would be here in the finals more often. End quote, Dick Allen. So to that point, Tom, and you mentioned it earlier in the show about the focus of what it takes, but it's not only the focus on TV, but it's the focus of that whole grind of 36 games or whatever the case may be to get to that point and keeping your focus throughout.
Yeah, well, Dick Allen's he's tough. I mean, for any sport where you can pick out the guys that are just tough and they come through and clutch situations, he's one of them. It's a different challenge all week when you're moving pair to pair and there's a whole sea of bowlers and the shot's completely different on every pair because you're following different people every time. There isn't as much focus on you or trying to beat one person. I mean, the week to lead up to the show is really not even, it's barely similar. It's hardly alike at all to the television show. So I think what you're hearing from him is he likes to be in that arena situation where it's one-on-one and the challenge is right in front of you. And he's going to use that mental toughness and ability to focus in that environment. That's different from, you know, having to wait for longer between games or between shots and having to bowl with more people and people to your right and your left. That's a different situation completely.
See, and that is what I think makes Belmonte so good. I mean, he can take that same mental focus that he has probably on a TV show and be able to apply it through all the crap that happens during qualifying, going through and be able to keep that focus. Now, you may think he's a jerk if you're another bowler or whatever the case may be. But he's acting every time is like he's on TV and he's trying to get that job done.
He's also the thing that Belmo that I've seen through the years that I very rarely see in any other player is when he has a bad game, he has bad games during qualifying and he always comes back with like a 280, you know, like a crazy score game. He just starts stringing strikes on the heels of a bad game. So most people get worried, they get nervous, they press, they don't react very well to a downswing during a round. But Belmo seems to be able to put shots aside and put full games aside better than anyone I've ever seen.
When we were in Indianapolis, match play, second round of match play, Belmo has a bad game. West Milwaukee gets within like 50 pins of him. Belmo then turns around the next game, shoots 300. And he's got a 170-pin lead going into the evening block. This week in World Series, in the World Championship match play, Belmo has a bad game. First time in 20 games, he's got less than a 100-pin lead, comes back, shoots 279. opens it back up to triple digits again. Nobody's close the rest of the way. It's just amazing how he can just separate himself from the field when the guys try to close back in on him.
He has a brilliant mind. Another one that can do anything to the ball. I keep remembering the year we had Del Bellard on. And Del said, I haven't met many people in my life, and Del met a lot of pro bowlers. And we put him through all these tests, and he's passed all of them. Mm-hmm. There's not anything that Belmo can't do with the ball, including throwing it back up like Simonson.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, we'll take a quick timeout. So that is the PBA Cheetah Championship. Coming up next, the PBA Chameleon Championship. We'll talk about that next with the commissioner of the PBA Tour, Tom Clark, joins us in studio. Castle 8, Spare Time Bowling Show, only on 105.7 FM. The Fan, Steve Sparky, Pfeiffer, Phil Brilo, Faux Bowling, Extra Frame over there. Over here is Dwight Albrecht, Spare Time Pro Shop in New Berlin. Across from me, Tom Clark, Commissioner of the PBA Tour. He's been in here for the whole show. Thanks again for him for coming in. Always can listen to our show on the radio.com app, anywhere you may be. Just make sure to favorite 105.7 FM, The Fan. Make sure you have the right one, because there's 105.7 The Fan in Baltimore. And then we're 105.7 FM, The Fan, here in Milwaukee. You can use that radio.com app. Okay, so next one up. I got through more of this one. I'll tell you what happened on this one as we get through it. It's so frustrating. Chameleon Championship. So the seeding happens. Belmonte, Hambone in the fourth, knocks out the 10 late. Gomez comes back and wins the first seed in the 10th, mm-hmm. Andres Gomez, which was nice. I wasn't all that concerned for Belmonte at that point watching. Like, okay, he's a 2 seed, so what? I mean, so he's got to win 2 matches instead of 1. I think he'll be okay. But it was a nice little feather in the cap for Andres Gomez, who, like Tom said earlier, you get that 1 seed, you're guaranteed X amount of dollars in it. And at that point, it's for just sitting there. If he loses, it's 10 grand.
And I thought that was the one guy that could put up a fight against Belmonte, because Gomez likes to get in and circle it. Yes, mm-hmm. his ball speed's probably 3 or 4 miles an hour slower than Belmo, but he can get in as far left as Belmo does and still make it work. So I'm thinking, it's going to be a heck of a championship match. I already had that one penciled in once the shootout was done.
Right. So you had Gomez at 235, Belmonte at 227, Chapman. A.J. Chapman at 205, and Ronnie Russell at 179. I forgot about Ronnie Russell. It's been a while for Ronnie Russell since he's won something. In fact, the last time he won, wasn't it at the World Series of Bowling?
It was in the
Vegas?
Chameleon on the same pattern.
Because I interviewed him when he won. That was the last time.
He's made the finals in the Chameleon at the World Series, I think, 3 times, including the first time we were ever in Detroit. He made the show and bowled against Bill O'Neill for the title, and Bill won his first title at the World Series of Bowling 1 in the same arena. And then to have Ronnie come back. And, we've all been rooting for him because he's a big favorite of all the players. Having Ronnie back on a show, and he really represented himself well, having his family there was a really good sign. I think we'll see him again.
There was a piece on Flow Bowling that was done earlier in the year, one of the feature pieces, and they asked the players who they thought the most overrated bowler was. And this came out right before the Tournament of Champions. And a few guys said Ronnie Russell. A lot of guys were really political, go, hey, you can't say that, different things. And some guys flat out said Ronnie Russell, most overrated bowler. And that kind of lit a fire under his backside from February on. It was nice to see Ronnie make a show and fight through everything.
I didn't endorse that feature, by the way.
When it first came out, I walked up to Ronnie. I go, Ronnie, I had nothing to do with this, but you're going to hear about it soon. I had nothing to do with this.
I actually thought those guys were joking. I couldn't believe somebody would even... I would never say that about a fellow competitor, unless it was anonymous, maybe, because I thought they were kidding when they said it, but thinking that Ronnie's the type of guy who can take a joke, but he took it pretty seriously.
Yeah.
He did.
Well, that's good.
So
you take his motivation and you go, and you end up making a TV show at the end of the day. You know, you use that stuff. I mean, Michael Jordan, all these guys. You hear stuff, criticisms, whatever else, you just put in your back pocket and go, okay, fine, I'll show you. I'll show you that you're an idiot. And and he did. And that's what happens.
You, yeah.
Right. So the most famous split left this entire week was a 2-4-8-10.
Oh, yeah.
Over and over and over and over again is what
and
we
made.
Saw.
And made every time.
Yeah. Pretty seemingly. Yep. Russell leaves a 2-4-8-10 there, gets 3 of the pins in the first, and then decides he's going to make the switch to a reactive resin. At that point, Dwight, were you thinking, that's a good move?
Yeah, but
what stole?
Oh, maybe not.
Yeah, what stole this show was obviously Kyle Troop and his fro and being in and giving Randy Peterson crap about the cold eight.
I'm getting to that.
He's
the
next one. Was he this one? No.
Yeah, yep. Kyle Troop's in this one.
Yeah, Kyle Troop's in this one.
Troop's in this one, right. So then Russell leaves a 2-4-8-10 again in the third on that damn left lane that we all found out to be a problem and picks it up this time, and everybody goes crazy. Russell then throws way right on the left lane, stamps back for a strike on the in the fifth frame, and I thought Rob Stone was going to have a heart attack on some of these balls because they were going so close to the gutter, and it was just awesome because – what Stone gives you that I love is the genuine fan in the booth. Yep. Like that guy at home watching, like, oh my God, he's going to throw a gutter. Yep. Whoop, there goes back. Yep. It's just awesome. Like, I can't explain to you how good that really is. And I don't know if he realizes it, but the connection that he has with a, just the casual fan at home, I just think is unmatched at this point.
Yeah, he's really become an incredible. He was always great, but he's become, I think, one of the best on TV. I had a long talk with him about just
talking to him again now.
Well,
you
change
his
not,
career.
No,
look
not,
at you.
Not trying to help him. I wanted to learn from him. I wanted to know from him how he got so good. And he said he really watches the best. He learned a lot from Gus Johnson. He learned a lot about setting up big moments and hitting those moments and making sure that he's on for those and being the fan. And being someone who's excited about what's happening and not faking it and really meaning it and making that show up on TV. It's great to be involved with him. We can all learn from Rob. I only learn from Rob. I don't tell him what to do.
Rob Stone, when he was on our show, brought up a comparison that I thought was really, really good. And that was he brought up the WWE or WWF. Mm-hmm. And he said, look, you could be a guy that nobody remembers, or you can be a guy that everybody remembers. Love me, hate me, but you're gonna know my name and you'll know who I am at the end of the day. And that really is that mentality applies to sports talk radio, applies to TV, applies to everything.
That's
right.
That's why you guys remember Kyle Troop, even though he was not on this show.
Correct. But we remember him because he was in the booth.
You got him on this show. You got him. Yes, he was in the booth.
That's what we're talking about.
Oh,
he was in the booth.
I thought you said he was
so
there.
Then Chapman comes back and throws a Hambone there in the fifth. Stone goes crazy. And then the joke happens, Hambones and Afros.
Right.
That was the joke that played out from Rob Stone. And I thought that was brilliant.
It was great.
It was absolutely brilliant. That should be a T-shirt with a big old afro on it. I'm telling you, you'd sell a ton. Then Chapman spares in the 6th, 7th, and 8th, which really killed him because Ronnie Russell at that point had really zeroed in. Russell, 6 in a row then there in the 9th. Chapman strikes in the 9th, now down 13, and we got a match. Chapman double, an 8 count for 244. Russell needs a striking 8 count to win at that point, leaves a 10-pin, almost a 7-10, not that it mattered. And then Chapman wins to advance over Ronnie Russell, 244 to 233. If you
great
tell
match.
Me that somebody's going to throw a 233 on TV, I'm going to tell you they're probably going to win in most situations. Absolutely. You just are. I mean, you can't be. Chapman, if you're Ronnie Russell, you can't be mad at that. You shot 233 and you lost. Whatever. It happens.
Chapman was Tuesday's Kyle Sherman.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we introduced Kyle Sherman on Monday, and on Tuesday, I think we all got to know AJ Chapman, and these are the young, up-and-coming players that are so solid and so good and so practiced, and they're exciting to watch.
That is the other thing about this tour right now, and we talked about this
all the time.
There is so much young talent that it is unbelievable. I remember talking, I think it was EJ Tackett, when we were in Vegas, and he had just come onto the scene, and asking him about, you know, how the bowling is perceived from college kids and everything else. And he said at that point, there's bowlers better than me, but they don't think there's enough money on tour or whatever else. So they're not coming on tour. They're going to go be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever they're going to be, right? And I was like, man, that's crazy. And now you fast forward however many years that's been, and you look at all this young talent. Mm-hmm. And as you see the prize money on this show and other shows and how that's going to grow as sponsorship comes in, there's going to be no bowlers left behind anymore. Those days are done.
I think, and hopefully Tom can back me up on this, but the way I'm starting to see fans react to anything, I think you're going to see bowlers with outside of bowling endorsement deals, more of them on their shirts. I mean, you see a couple of guys with it, like Sean Rash. He's got T-Mobile on there. Okay?
Right.
I think you're going to see a lot more of that coming up with the visibility that's happened with Fox Sports and Fox Sports 1. where these guys are going to be having outside of bowling companies on their jerseys, not just Mongoose and Turbo and Vice and all these other ones.
That's what I don't understand. I want to talk about these shows, but we only got a half hour left. But what I don't understand is, like, for this entire run, right? So you sign with a ball company as a bowler, right? So I'm Brunswick. I'm Sean Rash. Why wouldn't Brunswick then, if I'm paying you all this money, why wouldn't they go out and sell sponsorship for the bowlers to make themselves money on top of selling the bowling balls and say, look, you sign with us, you wear our sponsors that go on the jersey. So if Brunswick gets a deal with, say, T-Mobile, T-Mobile's on every Brunswick bowler. And if their Brunswick bowler gets on TV, T-Mobile gets all that FaceTime. That would have been one way for the bowling ball companies to offset the costs of paying these guys and whatever the cost may be. Wouldn't that make sense?
That's an interesting marketing angle that I don't know that we've really had that conversation. Because we talked about it from that perspective.
I think it's very, very difficult to ask one individual to pitch himself.
Well, most in other sports, if there's already a larger amount of money available or the expectation of corporate sponsors, they have agents that are doing that for them. An agency will hire people right out of school in the big sports, in football, baseball, basketball, hockey. But for bowling, that isn't there yet. I think that Phil touched on it, and I think that a smart sports agency would hire a Belmo or the next level of PBA players, banking on the idea that they get great television time. Everybody watching on TV sees them for an extended period of time close up, unlike most other sports. And as the sport continues to grow, the jerseys are so visible, yep. And the advertising is so visible, and the connection with a player to a brand. I mean, you know Rash is Brunswick. You know Belmo is Storm, and everybody knows all of those connections in the PBA. Once other companies get involved, that they will find a benefit. They're missing out right now, and we've been saying that for a long time, but I think the time's coming.
I think that if there's one guy, and I'm not a marketing specialist at any point, but I'm starting to get on your bandwagon, Sparky, in terms of how Troop is starting to market himself. I think he's one of
Rob Stone called it out during one of the shows of, like, you've got to get more of this stuff available for people to buy.
That, and then also Randy Peterson brought a comment up that he was getting his hair cut in Florida,
right?
And the barber talked about the fro that obviously Kyle Troop.
The guy with the big hair, right?
Right, but I think that Troop did a great job, not only in the booth and his insight, but I think he is the most marketable guy right now on that tour.
Yeah, him and Belmonte, and that's the one thing now.
Belmonte
nice
for his talent.
Because it was Belmonte and Rash that you wanted because of the rivalry and the dislike and all that stuff that went along with it. Now, Rash hasn't been there as much, but now if Troop can kind of be a semi-regular on TV, if there are weeks where Belmonte takes off, now you can't have them both take off, which we've already seen, but if one of them is on TV, you're going to have that draw for sure. And you've got all these other young bowlers that also, like you were talking about, guys that have their YouTube channel and everything else, that will draw as well. But yeah, Troop has definitely, I think, burst onto the scene for sure. More this year than he has had in the past, right, Tom?
Yes. Well, their ability to make shows is the most important thing. I mean, you can be the most entertaining guy and character in the world. If you never make TV,
doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. So Kyle has consistently gotten better. And we all remember he has a great pedigree. His father's one of the great bowlers ever. He's got it in his DNA, and he's another kid who really thinks anything is possible.
Good.
You know, he'll never give up, and so he's gotten better and added tricks to his game every year. His ball hits as hard as anyone I see out there now, and he keeps consistently, you know, going for big titles. So I think you're going to keep seeing him, but his personality, when he comes into a bowling center, everyone wants to be around him. Everyone gets a picture of him. When he was on the show this week, everyone was wearing an Afro wig, including me, for a while. You know, so he's definitely somebody we all love, and you're right. Any company would be smart to attach themselves. And the outside media follows him. He ends up on Deadspin.
Yep.
He ends up on
TMZ.
You know, all the Barstool. I mean, they all get a kick out of Kyle Troop, and it's in a way that isn't deprecating. It's in a way that's like, wow, this guy's awesome.
Right.
You
know? I like how Rob Stone picked up on High Five trying to get more of his outfits out there.
Yep,
for the public with the pants and the match and the shirt matching.
And I'll give you another one because I tried to talk to Kyle Troop when he was on this show. I don't think he listened to me, but I'm telling you, they should make kid size like Kyle Troop jerseys for Halloween and sell it with a fro and a bowling jersey, dude. I'm telling you,
they would eat it up.
That's
people,
a great idea.
People would buy it up. It's a Halloween costume. People would totally buy it up. I guarantee it. And grown men would probably buy it too. Okay, so match three. Belmonte light in the third. So he gets ready to take on AJ Chapman here. 210 split gets a two, down 12. Chapman throws a handbone there in the fifth. Belmonte double in the fifth, down 22. And then there's the 2-4-8-10 in the sixth off of the TV break. Gets two pins, and they were harping on this the entire week of how difficult it is coming off of that TV commercial break and throwing that next shot. And Troop within the show said, I always move two boards. I think he said left. Yep. Coming off of the TV break. Is that something that we've heard a lot from other bowlers saying never they automatically that. Move coming off a TV break?
Nowadays, yeah.
I've never really heard that there's like any kind of unwritten rule that you better come back ready to move before the shot. I just think you're just not as fresh and you're not as into the match. I really hate it. And every time we come back from a break, I say this is the biggest shot of the match. And you have some people that just are so used to it. But a guy like AJ Chapman's done it once before in his life. He's been on TV.
Right.
You know, so here he is, and you get a little cold standing there. You start thinking more. You look at the scoreboard for 4 minutes, waiting to come back. Yeah. I mean,
four minutes feels like a lifetime,
sure does.
Folks.
And now you got like the shot, and you've been in. You know, so it's tough. It's a hard shot, and I don't know. I think you move based on the idea that not on the lane changing. You're moving based on the idea that you will change,
right?
And I don't know that I would do that personally, but it's I wish we could format the show so that we didn't have breaks. We do not have breaks in championship matches.
Right.
We play the whole match straight through because we feel like let's bowl for a title and let's watch all 10 frames unfold. But in order to make these shows work on TV right now, you have to break in the middle of those matches.
And that's why I like the insight so much from the pros. And the things that you learn that go through their mind, and they're actually talking to you about it when they're in the booth with Randy and Rob.
Well, and Phil learns a ton to flow bowling. I'm sure
he's around it every day.
As well.
Geez, during the match play rounds, we had Asku, Stu, Jacob Butcher. We had all kinds of people
during
there talking about what's going on during match play.
Right. Yep. If you don't have flow bowling, y'all need to go get it because it's good stuff.
It's great.
It's good stuff during the week. Okay, so then 2-4-8-10, he gets a couple of pins. Chapman rebounds with a strike there in the seventh. Belmonte 10 pin spare in the seventh. Now down only six. Belmonte light in the eighth. Leaves a 2-8, spare picks that up. Chapman doubles in the eighth, slows the ball down a mile per hour. Mm. With all due respect, there's no way I could do that. I mean, there's just no chance. When they showed it, I was like, yeah, there's no way. And if you at home think you can do it, go ahead and try. A lot of these bowling houses now show you how fast you're throwing it. Right. Try and bring it down by only a mile per hour and see how that works.
Yeah, and doing that on a house shot's a hell of a lot easier.
Sure. Yeah. But still, just getting the speed down to go only a mile per hour on one shot.
Right.
You don't get to practice it for 10 shots. No. You do it the next shot.
Yep.
That's crazy. then Chapman, and this is pretty much the match here, leaves a pocket 7-10 split in the ninth. Mm. Nothing you can do. And that's the break that Belmonte really was looking for. Took it, strikes in the ninth, and that's it. Belmonte leaves a 4-10 split, and that was embarrassing because he walked it out thinking that thing was a strike.
Right.
Remember? He was walking it out like, it's over right here.
Fooled.
Right. Gets one of the two pins, gets 200. Chapman strikes first ball in the 10th, buries the ball, the second ball, leaves the 10 pin, and ends up losing. Needed that double.
Yeah, he leaked that one a little to the right. When he went back and talked, you could see his ball reps, Jim Callen, going, yeah, he missed a little right in that center.
Doesn't take much.
If you get behind the head pin, you're not getting that 10-pin out if you get behind the head pin.
Just nuts.
There's a lot of luck in there's a lot of luck in bowling, and everybody knows it at those last moments in one frame where things can go one way or the other. The difference between a pocket 7-10 and a strike is so small that you can't even – hardly explain it, and that's really what I love about bowling. That's what makes it so exciting. It's not a referee that's going to make a bad call with 10 seconds left in the game.
Right.
It's fate. You know, it's like, and the greatest players know that, and they sort of make luck happen. But it's
We got luck coming up in the championship match because Belmonte doubles to start the championship match against Andres Gomez, and then the 10 pin. Spare in the third. You talk about skinny jeans, whatever Rob So wants to use. I'm not convinced the ball touched the damn pin.
Wind.
I rewound it and I fast forward. I'm like, I don't think it touched it. It was insane.
It was the wind.
Yes. Yeah. It was insane. I've never seen anything like it. Gomez gets his first strike in the third, down 11. After six, Belmonte now up 10. Both players have spares up in the 10th. and my DVR stopped recording at the two-hour mark. And that's where it ended for me going into the seventh frame. Isn't
live,
that nice?
Live sports. You got to go over, man.
Yeah, the 30-minute extension?
Yeah.
You're not funny. Gomez misses the 10-pin late in that match. Belmonte strikes to win, and Belmonte wins another championship. The Chameleon Championship is his.
Number 20.
Yep, unbelievable. He's just really, really good. Coming up next, we'll move on to the next day of the week in the World Series of Bowling. Stay tuned. Castle Lake Spare Time Bowling Show on 105.7 FM. The Fan, 2 hours was simply not long enough. Just wasn't long enough at all.
Let's go three.
We could have gone three.
My flight doesn't leave till 6.
No,
I got time
tonight.
There's nothing. Bucks play this afternoon, and we'll have the Pickett State Milwaukee Probes postgame show immediately following that. Ryan Horvath hosting that show this afternoon. All right, so Scorpio Championship. We're just going to blow through this quickly here. B.J. Moore ended up being the one seed. Bill O'Neill, 215 in the second seed. Prather, 212. And Troop makes the match at 194. Things weren't going well for him, but I think he used like three different balls.
Six different balls in the seeding game?
Yeah,
when they did the update in game two, Kimberly talked about six different bowling balls he used.
That's crazy. So he was just trying to figure it out.
Right.
Then you go to match two, you go to the booth, and there's Chris Barnes wearing the Kyle Troop wig. I mean, I'm telling you, that is pretty
priceless.
Good. And I wrote down on here, Randy Peterson stunned by Chris Barnes taking Prather to win it. And I just put ha, 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 ha. Like, he literally was like almost turning red and stuttering. the fact that he took Prather, he just couldn't see it.
I thought it was brilliant.
And then, as we talked about earlier, I wrote down, love Rob Stone calling out high five gear to make more Troop stuff.
Yep.
So that was really good. Barnes calls out the left lane being the lane that has to be figured out to win. And the very next ball, Prather leaves a 2-4-8-10. On that lane in the seventh, but picks it up. Rob Stone yelling, remember that pickup for Chris Prather. And that came back to be very, very true at that point as Prather ends up doubling in the 10th to win it over Kyle Troop. Match three, it's Bill O'Neill and Chris Prather. O'Neill through the nose, 3-6-7-10 split, and gets two of the pins for a 190 there in the 10th frame. Prather strikes the first ball, needs a double and two pins to win. Second ball strike, nine count to win there, 198 to 190.
It's just so weird because with O'Neill and then with Moore in the final match, why they were picking that left lane. I mean, I understand you want
Peterson
other guy to have.
Was killing him for
I know.
It.
I think you want to finish last.
Yeah, you think you want to know what you need in a lot of these times. You're on tour. You go through it all the time. If you know one lane's tougher than the other, so what if you got to finish after the other guy does? Yeah. You know what you need? Throw it. It was so weird that they kept putting pressure on Prather. And the kid didn't fold.
No, he did not. Championship match. Now it's B.J. Moore's turn to go against Chris Prather. B.J. Moore gets a spare. Then strike in the second frame on the left lane. I write down sign of things to come, question mark. My very next note is never mind. Ha, ha, ha. 2-8-10 split on the left lane in the fourth against the 2-8. I mean, seriously, that's what it was, though, Tom, wasn't it? That left lane.
That stuff kept popping up. You know, the way shots changed so fast, I think that before everyone – in hindsight, you know the left lane was going to kind of stay bad, but sometimes they think it might come back. You know, it might come back to you, and the other lane might turn into the tough one. So it's not as easy to predict as you might think, but yeah.
Tom, sitting in the crowd, obviously watching it on TV, when that oil broke down and you could see the path both players were taking, could you see that from the stands? You could see Prather was just dropping that ball right over that path every time to the pocket.
Well, that's why he's able to try six balls and know the reaction. It's not like you or I where we needed to throw one ball like 10 times before we knew for a fact that but he is almost perfect right now.
Yes.
The way he's been throwing the ball for like almost a year, he has been almost perfect in that he knows he's going to execute.
Yep.
So if he executes, now he knows what his ball reaction is. And
I am so impressed with this game.
B.J. Moore, Bill O'Neill, Chris Prather, I mean, they all throw the ball kind of similarly.
Same, yeah.
And they're all playing the exact same line, so it's really tricky. You can see on those strike track stats that everybody's there.
It's really good. Prather then leaves a pocket 4-10 split in the sixth, which was stupid. I still can't believe that happened.
Yeah.
More strikes in the seventh, now up two. Nine count spare in the eighth on the left frame. Prather strikes in the eighth and the ninth on the left. Moore leaves a 10-pin in the ninth, picks it up, and my DVR stops in the 10th frame.
You got to learn a lesson, man.
DVR stops.
Set it for a half
going
hour longer.
Going into the 10th frame, DVR stopped. Shut off. Well, I was so mad.
B.J. Moore trying to fight the left lane in the 10th frame. He tried circling him more, and he just didn't have the touch. He left a 2-10, still made it, and then left it where Prather needed a mark to win. Prather goes a little high. Yeah, 4-pin, spared it up. There's your winner.
Yeah, so there you go. So Prather wins it there in the 10th. Everybody else saw it. Coming up next, we'll talk about the greatest ever, Jason Belmonte, in the PBA World Championship. Last segment, you haven't been here for the full 2 hours. Shame on you. All right. So like the rest of the week for me, this will be an abbreviated version of the last segment of the show because we have approximately 5 minutes left. Okay, so the PBA World Championship, match number one. This was a normal stepladder. B.J. Moore just left too many splits. Three of them by my count, 1-2-4-8 and 2-2-10 splits. Buttriff was rolling, including a handbone there in the sixth. Buttriff wins match number two. Match number two, Norm Duke is now in the booth. Is always a nice thing there. Now it's Buttriff versus Bill O'Neill. O'Neill gets a late messenger for a double in the fourth, but then 2-8 there in the fifth, picks that up. Buttriff throws a turkey in the fifth, up one after five. We got ourselves a match. Buttriff leaves a 7-pin, picks it up in the sixth. Buttriff, two strikes and nine count in the 10th for 235. O'Neill needed, what did he need? At least one strike, I know.
Needed
right?
The first one.
Needed the first one, a strike and a spare or something along those lines, and leaves a solid 10-pin on the first ball. Buttriff advances to match number three. And there's Mr. McNeil again. Opens there in the seventh while Buttriff strikes in the seventh. McNeil down five only after seven, so it's still a match. McNeil nine count in the eighth, the 6-pin. And Randy Peterson at that point said that was pretty much it once he left that. It was pretty much done. Buttriff, however, Len leaves a crazy 5-6. Think about that for a second. You hit the pocket, and it's a 5-6. And the both pins moved, but they weren't spotted that way, right? They were spotted on their actual marks that they were supposed to be on, or they spotted the way they were left.
The pin that wasn't knocked over by the machine stayed in its exact spot. The pin that was knocked over by the machine had to be reset in its original spot.
That's why it created
a wider split. That was a bad break.
Bad break, right. So that was in the eighth. Gets just the 6-pin. Buttriff strikes in the ninth. McNeil 8 spare in the ninth. McNeil then solid 7-pin on the first ball in the 10th. Spare strike ball on the third, 179. Buttriff strikes on the first ball, needs 8 now to win. Leaves a 7, and that leaves a 7-pin and wins. Now the championship match with 4 minutes to go approximately in the show. Belmonte, Turkey.
Well, you're setting up the perfect championship match for the World Championship.
That's correct.
Because you had the guy that dominated the early part of the year, the guy that's dominated lately, right, left. I mean, this is it. This is it, man.
Belmonte, Turkey to start the match. Then they show the picture of his kids at the school with all the other classmates school in Australia. And then he leaves the 10-pin on the next shot, picks that up 20 after four. I got to be honest with you, throughout this match, I kind of felt like Belmonte was just kind of ahead, but Buttriff wouldn't go away.
Nope.
But when he missed the 7-pin in the sixth, I'm going, well, that's match.
Yep.
It's done. There's no chance. Yep. But he wasn't giving up. He strikes in the seventh. He strikes in the eighth. He strikes in the ninth. He strikes out in the 10th, ends with 6 in a row to make Belmonte have to do something. In the 10th, needs a strike and a spare to win. Of course, he throws that strike in the 10th because he's Jason Belmonte. Strikes at the second bowl. Rob Stone yells, he is the greatest.
Yep.
And I find it hard to believe anybody can argue.
My question for you guys is, obviously, now that I predicted that Belmo is going to have a great World Series, I didn't think he would do what he did. Now does he lock up Player of the Year honors because of this?
Chris Barnes already tweeted. He had a tweet last week that said, just give it to him.
It's done. Well, just look how far ahead he is in the
playoffs. I mean, you can't, obviously.
Well, the Masters is coming up this week.
Yep.
The U.S. Open still is there. There's 8 other titles. I mean, if Norm Duke won the Masters and the U.S. Open and plus 2 other titles.
Yeah, good argument.
Anthony Simonson won the Players' Championship. If Anthony Simonson wins 3 majors this year, I mean, so it's not completely over, but, I mean, it'd be hard to believe it could happen. That anyone else could pass him. But, what you see with Belmonte, I had a good conversation with a friend of mine who's a bowling historian, and you know, Don Carter was kind of like the original greatest of all time, and he had a bent elbow release that really no one copies. It looks like he's shoveling the ball down the lane, and it looked almost goofy in a way when you look back. And then the next time someone really started talking about revolutionizing the game, it was Mark Roth and with a power. And I think what we're seeing with Belmo is his elbow is bent like Don Carter because he holds it with two hands. So it's always bent. And yet he has a supercharged bowling ball with power like Mark Roth. So he's like a combination of Don Carter and Mark Roth that is the most undeniable power we've ever seen. And combine that with the mental game we've talked about. Wow, we're witnessing something.
No doubt about it. And now PBA League gets going, right?
Can't wait. It'll be exciting. Well, we got the Masters coming up, and then we have the draft for the PBA League, and that's going to be live on Flow Bowling on April 8th. We'll find out how those teams stack up. And we have the PBA playoffs coming up, too, so everybody's still fighting for position in the playoffs. It seems like we've had an amazing year up till now.
There's a lot to go.
I just want to say thank you, Tom, for the job you're doing.
Oh, yeah, I appreciate you guys every week.
You've done a great job. I appreciate you coming in as well. Phil Brilo, Dwight Albrecht, Tom Clark, Commissioner of the PBA Tour. Stay tuned. Great things still to come in the PBA. Have a good day. College Basketball Show at noon.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.